Hello everyone, thank you for listening to this podcast. I hope you have a good sleep. Hello guys, welcome to this episode. Today we're going to talk about epigenetics. So first of all, what is epigenetics? Well, the definition of epigenetics is that it is a stable difference in phenotype without differences in genotype, which involves in regulation of gene expressions. So that, you know, when we talk about epigenetics, it's always there's something different in the phenotype without changing the actual DNA sequences, which is called the genotype. Now, why do we want to study epigenetics? We want to study epigenetics because there are many biological phenomena such as development in preening, X inactivation, cancer that cannot be explained just by, you know, the four letters of the genetic alphabet. So what is genetics? We talk about epigenetics. Now, genetics is the information that stored in the DNA sequence. So now from the naming, you can see that epigenetics is not talking about the changes in genetics, rather in phenotype. Okay. So how do we study epigenetics then? I mean, there are actually many ways. For a biologist or geneticist, they have a toolbox, and one of the examples of the two that is used to study epigenetics is using HPA2 enzymes and MSP1 enzymes, restriction enzymes. So what do? They have a specific cutting site, which is CCGG sequence. And HPA2 restriction enzyme will not cut if either of the cytosine is methylated. So in the sequence of CCGG, if one of the C is methylated, it will not cut. So it will not produce fragments. Meanwhile, MSP1 is not sensitive to methylation, so that whenever it sees a CCGG sequence, it will cut it. It will produce fragments. So that by running restriction enzymes using HPA2 and MSP1, we can tell that whether there is methylations for the specific sequence or not. Then, what is some potential problems or limitations for this assay using HPA2 and MSP1? So even though, you know, this assay provides access the methylation level, but you only access the level at the 5' CCGG sites, so that other methylation sites are not being detected or analyzed. That's why it doesn't provide single base resolution. And there's another problem is methylation context, because as we all know, the majority of DNA methylation occurs as CpG dinucleotides, and we're talking about CCGG, so that only not all the sites that they cut will be CpG sites, right? Only the middle, the CG site is a CpG site. And therefore, like, the assay may not be perfectly reflect, you know, what's happening of the CpG methylation status. So there will be actually like many noises. And then we have another method of analyzing DNA methylations, which is one of the hallmark of epigenetics. It is called bisulfide sequencing. So in bisulfide sequencing, we isolated a genomic DNA, and through a process of sulfonation, cytosine is changed to cytosine sulfonate, and then we have a hydrolytic deamination reaction to turn cytosine sulfonate into uracil sulfonate. And then there is a desulfonation reaction to turn uracil sulfonate to uracil. So basically, unmethylated cytosine will become uracil after this bisulfide reaction. Meanwhile, methylated cytosine will stay the same and chemically unchanged in this bisulfide reaction. So now we have the unmethylated C turned into uracil. What happens next is that we will run PCR reactions with our design primers, and then the amplified products will show us the differences between the unmethylated cytosine and the methylated cytosine. Why? Because in the PCR product, for the unmethylated cytosine in the genomic DNA, they become uracil and then they will amplify as thymine in the PCR products. And the methylated cytosine, because they are chemically unchanged and affected in the bisulfide reactions, they will remain as cytosine in the PCR product. And this is how we will, you know, analyze or look at DNA methylation, such as a gold standard method. So the advantage of using bisulfide sequencing is that it is sensitive and specific. It can detect methylation at single base resolution. However, the problem is that besides DNA methylation or methylated cytosine, there's actually hydroxymethylated cytosine, which is a product that is a modification of 5-methylated cytosine by an enzyme called TET, T-E-T enzyme. So it will not distinguish between a 5-methylated cytosine and a 5-hydroxymethylated cytosine. This is crucial because 5-hydroxymethylated cytosine is actually an intermediate product of demethylation. So if we cannot distinguish that, it will cause problem in our analysis. Also, like the harsh treatment conditions in bisulfide reaction also will degrade the DNA, which will cause some losses in the product that is being analyzed. So besides the restriction enzymes, we talk about HPA2, MSP1, and the bisulfide sequencing. What other methods can be used to study epigenetics and DNA methylation? Well, to answer this question, maybe we should reframe our research question. Maybe we want to look at like the genes and maybe the proteins involved in DNA methylation. So how do we do that? How do we find the genes or the proteins involved in DNA methylation? A simple way is to knock out the gene as well as make a hypoallele. And then we will check the methylation level. And we also do a rescue by reintroducing the wild type copy of the gene and see if methylation level restores. And I will talk about more about the rescue. Let's discuss an experiment setup for a DNMT1 homozygous knockout experiment. So in the experiment, there is a plus, plus zero, hypo zero, and zero genotypes of mice that are being studied. In the plus genotype of the mouse, Of course, this is the wild type genotype, both alleles, both copies of the DNMT1 genes are normal and functional. In other words, this organism or these mice produce normal levels of the DNMT1 enzyme. And then the next genotype, +0 or +null, this is a heterozygote genotype where one allele is normal, which is like the plus sign, and the other allele is a null, is a mutation. So in these mice, it doesn't produce a functional DNMT1 enzyme, and its organism produces lower level of DNMT1 compared to the wild type, because it has one functional copy and the other one is mutated. So the third genotype we have is hypo/null or hypo/0. So in this third genotype, one allele is a hypomorphic mutation, so that it is not mutated to the point that it doesn't produce a functional DNMT1 enzyme. Instead, it produces less functional DNMT1 enzyme than the normal allele. But it still produces some functional DNMT1 enzyme. And the other allele is a mutated copy. So in theory, this genotype, the organism with this genotype, has a even lower level of DNMT1 than the +null genotype, which is the second genotype we talked about earlier. And then the fourth genotype is the null/null or 0/0. This is a homozygous null genotype in which both alleles of the DNMT1 gene have a null mutation and do not produce a functional DNMT1 enzyme. So this organism does not produce DNMT1 at all. And this actually serves, you know, like a baseline to see what's going on if the DNMT1 gene is fully knockout in mice. And this is the baseline, the fourth one, null/null, and +++/+ is a wild type genotype. So in theory, these two genotypes share like the largest differences in terms of the levels of the protein DNMT1 that we wish to study. Now, +/null and hypo/null, why do we have two genotypes for this study? Well, the +null/null is a typical heterozygous one, and because we want to see what happens if the DNMT1 enzyme is not. Okay, let me say that again. So producing, you know, the hypo/null allele is to study the decrease in methylation levels and the effect on, you know, the phenotype. Will it cause diseases or not? Because sometimes a full knockout will be lethal, you know, it will just kill the mice. That's why we have this hypo allele to carry this hypomorphic mutation, so that it produces less DNMT1 enzyme, so that there is hypomethylation instead of hypermethylation. And we will see where these genotypes lead to any diseases, cancers, or whatsoever. So I hope this is clear. And let me go back to the rescue experiment. So now we have all four different genotypes of mice in the cages, and now we are studying the effects, and then there is a rescue. So what is a rescue? So a rescue experiment is basically a genetic complementation test. What is it? So a rescue experiment is introducing a wild type copy of the gene into the cells with the hypomorphic allele and see, you know, if this reintroduction of the wild type allele will reverse the changes, the observed effects to normal, and you know, and to conclude that, you know, if the observed changes, the diseases, the cancers are specifically due to the hypoallele, or you know, are there some off-target effects. So what does that mean? Well, in other words, when we introduce the hypomorphic allele, when we make the hypo slash null genotype, we have these mice with, I don't know, some diseases, right? So does that mean that this hypomorphic mutation causes these diseases? Well, we don't know. We cannot conclude just by this observation, because it's not, in logical sense, it's not an induction. Sorry, it's not a deduction, because there's, you know, as we all know, the biological system is complicated, and by introducing this hypo slash now genotype, and then we see that changes, we cannot conclude this is an exclusive relationship. We cannot deduce that, okay, so this hypomorphic mutations causes this observation, because there is a concept of collateral damages, which means that by changing an allele, like introducing a hypomorphic mutation, we will result changes in the DNA sequence that is not the intended target of the genetic engineering approach, which means there's like off target effects. That's why it's called collateral damages. So we cannot conclude that, okay, by introducing a hypomorphic mutations to the DNMT1 gene, and then we observe this is diseases, so that, okay, a lower level of DNMT1 will cause such disease. We cannot say that, because we cannot deduce that, because we are not sure if there's collateral damages in the allele. So that's why we need to reintroduce the wild type allele back to this hypo slash null genotype, and to see if the observed effects restores. If the observed, let's say, diseases, tumors is gone, is restored. Because by observing that, we can conclude that, okay, these observed effects or these diseases is actually due to the hypomorphic mutations on the DNMT1 gene. So this is the art of rescue, and to enhance this rescue, we usually generate two constructs with GFP protein, green fluorescence protein. So let's say we are doing DNMT1. Now we will have two constructs. One is called GFP-DNMT1, so that this construct will express DNMT1 and GFP, and then a normal DNMT1 enzyme, by the way. And then the second construct we'll have is called GFP-DNMT1QE. So QE stands for amino acid that is mutated, which means, in other words, this second construct does not have the enzymatic activity or functions. Okay, it's only like a DNMT1 and like a DNNT1 without any function, but it still is expressed with GFP protein. So why do we have these two constructs? One is enzymatically functional, one is not. Well, this again is to ensure that the binding of GFP does not rescue the methylation, right? Because now, as we talk about, we have the hypo slash now allele. Now we want to reintroduce the wild type DNMT1 gene to it, right? And then we want to observe if there's any restoration of the effects or changes. Now, by reintroducing it, we need to have attack of the reintroduced DNMT1. That's why we have the GFP protein. But then we cannot rule out if the binding of the GFP protein actually, you know, plays a role in the rescue, you know, in rescuing the methylation level, let's say, or restoring the effect. So now we also have to make a GFP-DNMT1 with no enzymatic activity to ensure that the presence of the GFP protein itself does not cause the rescue, does not restore the disease, does not restore the observed effects, right? So by having these two constructs in the rescue experiment, we can, you know, say that if there's any restoration, it is indeed due to the enzymatic activity, right, of the DNMT1 that rescues the DNA methylation.